This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It is Friday, it's the 22nd of March 2024. Coming up today, big news from Aira and the Microsoft Surface event. Should we be excited?
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Bow bow. Hello, Sean Preece.
Bow bow, Stephen Scott. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Hey, oh, it's the weekend.
It's been a fun week. No, it's been a fun week, though, right? Because we've had CSUN happening, lots of breaking news
there.
Going on.
Just want to point that out.
Although next year, it is their 40th anniversary.
Oh.
And I think we should do our show from the CSUN exhibition floor. I'm not sure they're too keen on that idea, but I think it's a good idea.
Please let us in. We'd behave.
Well, no, we will behave. We are very well behaved. As long as coffee for me.
Yes.
And what is your thing again? I mean, I know food, obviously.
Diet Cola. Yeah.
Diet Cola.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's got to be diet because, you know, health.
You're a health conscious man.
Hang on a minute. Stop right there.
What?
Please let us go to CSUN, by the way.
Yes.
I just want to say.
No, not that one. That one. Yeah.
That's what you can expect if we go to CSUN. That level of professionalism. Let me just say, Stephen Scott, your intro there. What a disgrace.
Yes.
Should we be excited by the Surface event?
Yes.
I'm fed up with this.
It was a question. It was not a statement.
Oh, was it? Oh, I've noticed this creeping in lately. You just going around throwing things at windows all the time. Just let it go. Of course we should be excited by the Surface event.
Just for any lawmakers that are perhaps listening to the show.
Yes.
He's talking about Microsoft Windows, not actual Windows.
No. He couldn't hit them. Trust me.
No way. I'd have to have the effort to pick something up to throw at said window.
Yes.
Not going to happen. But no, I have been rather making not spurious claims like you're suggesting.
No.
I just have not perhaps been quite as talkative about Windows. Because I'm using Mac, so why would I talk about using the PC?
Look,
we brought Robin on the other day, and that's exactly why.
Absolutely correct. The Mac is a fine OS, sir. I'm just saying, there's no need to cast aspersions on Windows. Everyone's excited. Mm. Do you know what? I got very excited today. I set myself up. I got my delivery of chicken. Got that all ready. Got my shed set up, nice and relaxed, ready for the event. And then I couldn't find it anywhere. So I ended up not watching the event.
Right. So you have no idea what happened.
I have absolutely. So I'm very interested in what you've got to say today.
Well,
I have no idea.
Thank goodness that yesterday on Access Tech Live, we had Zach Bowden on from Windows Central to share with us some information about it. Because I have to be honest, we were on Access Tech Live during the event. And, you know, I obviously, could go back and watch it again. But who's going to do that? Let's be honest. You're going to go straight to the YouTube video that says everything they reported in 5 minutes.
Exactly. Yes.
Or I'm going to read an article about it, which is exactly what I'm doing. I'll be honest, you know, okay, two hardware announcements that stood out here. Surface Pro 10, Surface Laptop 6. But there's two key words in this: for business. So whilst it wasn't tipped as this, it was a business event, which I think is maybe why you were struggling to find access to watching it online.
Yep.
Not that it was restricted, but I think it was only available for business people.
Oh, and I'm definitely not
for the likes of us, but for business
not
people.
Not for us plebs, no. Well,
people in the business, I like saying that.
Business. I looked all over Microsoft.com. I looked on the events calendar for Microsoft, and I just couldn't find anything. So, yes, obviously for business only.
Well, Zach Bowden was on Access Tech Live. Let's listen to a clip of him explaining some of the announcements that were announced yesterday at that Microsoft Surface event.
So yeah, Microsoft has unveiled two new products today. They've unveiled the Surface Pro 10 for business and the Surface Laptop 6 for business. The for business sort of fix there being that these are only available to Microsoft's commercial customers, so you won't find them in Best Buy and Amazon, but you can head to the Microsoft Store online and purchase one yourself if it's something you really want. These are really designed for sort of being purchased in bulk by large enterprises or educational establishments. But there are some new upgrades here. We do have Intel Core Ultra chips powering both the Surface Pro 10 and Surface Laptop 6, which offer 2 times faster performance over the previous Surface Pro and Surface Laptop, which I think were powered by Intel 12th Gen chips. We have new RAM options up to 64 gigabytes for the first time in both Surface Pro and Surface Laptop, and a number of display and webcam upgrades as well.
Now, you can hear more of that conversation with Mark and I on Access Tech Live over on AMI TV, which is AMI Plus, of course, on demand, and on YouTube, where you can watch the entire episode. So, 2 new devices, but these are focused at business. It does give us a bit of an indication, though, as to what is coming in May, because there's another Surface event happening in May, and this is aimed at the consumers.
Great!
But the question that we did ask to Zach was, you know, what will this mean? Will it be the same devices, essentially, but with a picture of Clippy on the back of it? You know, because it's all about AI, right?
Yes.
Or, you know, are they going to come up with something different? And Zach was kind of, it was interesting when he talked about this. You should go back and listen, because he talks a lot about the fact that Microsoft have done this before, where they've come up with different versions for consumers, even different designs for consumers versus business. And that's partly because of the fact that businesses often have, say, for example, cases or, you know, hardware requirements for, you know, the particular devices. They don't want that to change. They physically don't want any dimensions to change. So for that reason, they keep everything almost the same for a longer period of time, whereas consumers get different designs, more rounded edges, all that kind of stuff that perhaps you wouldn't get on, you know, on other devices.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting.
It's interesting that the consumer model sort of follows the fashion, follows the trend.
Yes,
whereas the enterprise can't do that for, you know, legacy reasons. So,
yeah,
it's something I never really thought about and something I'd never really noticed before. But if you go back into history, it's something Microsoft has done previously. I mean, you know, business is their business. How many times are we going to say business today? Every time
business.
Every time business is mentioned, everyone take a drink of water.
Of water. Yeah, just in case you're listening, don't. We nearly get the email jingle again. So Microsoft's AI assistant was really the focus here, as I kind of imagined it would be, especially for, let's say it together,
Copilot.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm so glad we prepped this show. I'm so glad we spend the hours we do. What do we do in the hours we do before this program? I never really understand.
That's
that.
Top secret.
We don't prep it, do we?
No.
Yeah, exactly. It's top secret. For all our sakes, it's probably a good idea. It remains top secret.
While I was looking around for the business event, I was watching last year's Surface event.
Oh.
And of course,
binge watching,
were
you?
I was. Yeah, well, you know, I was feeling a little bit left out. And of course, that was where they introduced Copilot. And it was all Copilot virtually all the way through, and AI. So I was interested to see if there was any callback to Copilot during this one aimed at business particularly.
Well, not so much in terms of features, I don't think. They focus more on hardware. But the thing that we've talked about in our community quite a lot is the introduction of, some would say removal of something else, but introduction of the Copilot key.
Oh, yeah.
So this has been talked about. So the Surface Laptop 6 for business and Surface Pro 10 for business will come with Copilot keys included, but only on select models. Now, this is interesting as well. And the reason for this is because Windows Copilot is still in preview form. It's not available to everyone yet. I wonder, there's been a little bit of disquiet about this decision to bring in a Copilot key, especially in the blind community. A lot of blind people saying this is not great. Leave our applications key alone. I'm still saying, where's my insert key? That's been gone from there for long enough, and no one seems to care but me.
Funnily enough, though, that's a really interesting comparison, because you're absolutely right. Some people could care less about a certain key, unless you're using it. It's not a problem until it affects you, but it's absolutely true. And it bothers me, because I do use the application key. I don't like using, Shift F10. It's just, you know, it's two hands off the keyboard almost to rearrange. Anytime you got to move off that home row, I don't like it. So the application key is vital for me. But then again, you could say the same for the insert key, whereas I could care less.
That's right. No, you're absolutely right. And there are situations, not so much for me personally, but I've read people say, you know, there are occasions where if you're a screen reader user, yes, Shift F10 is good for bringing up the application's menu. It's a way of doing it. It's not ideal for a lot of people, like you're saying. Also, it's not the use case for a lot of people either. There are other reasons why you may want that application's key. So it is important. I think what would have been smart here, and it may well be the case that it can be done. I mean, we all know about, well, at least we've talked about on the show, sharp keys, which is a way of remapping certain keys.
Yeah, but who wants to do that every
time?
Yeah,
I know. It's not ideally, you just want a toggle in the settings that could say, can't it just be... Well, no, okay, I get that. But I can understand why they might want a Copilot key. I get that.
No.
Look, it's going to be the heart of the system, isn't it?
No.
It's going to be the heart of the system.
No.
Okay.
Are you
usually sit there barking like a dog for the next hour.
No, listen. How about copy and paste and cut? I mean...
But you want a key for that as well?
Well, why not? I mean, how often do people use those? All the time.
You can buy keys that do that.
You can buy keys. Yeah, but it's not a standard, right? What I'm saying is everyone seems perfectly happy with the keyboard shortcut Control-C, Control-X, Control-V to do that.
Yeah. Oh, I see what
so
you're
what's
saying.
The big deal about having a shortcut for Copilot? Why has that suddenly got to be dedicated to its own key at the
expense of the application key? I think it's simply because AI is at the heart of everything going forward. Copilot, as far as Microsoft are concerned, is going to be the heart of everything they do.
Mm.
So if you're in any application, you're going to pull up a Copilot. Because remember, of course, Copilot... It's hard to say Copilot, because like Robin was saying the other day, there are multiple Copilots for different applications. So when you're in an application, you press that key, that will get you access to the chatbot or whatever it is that allows you to ask a question, you know, about a specific thing or, you know, you want to perform a certain task. I get why they want to do it. What I'm saying is, why can't they just introduce a toggle in the settings that says, look, I don't want to do that. I'm happy with Windows C, so I'll use that. But on this particular key, I'd like the application's key. I don't see why it can't be a choice.
Well, to be fair, that could happen, right?
Mm. I mean, but you don't know yet. But this is what's interesting about this announcement is they're saying on certain devices, this Copilot key exists. So I wonder if in the consumer models, this might be optional. Because remember, with a Surface Pro, for example, you can buy different keyboards.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right that Copilot key is just going to become standard. It's going to be everywhere. It's not going to happen like that. It's going to be there for everywhere.
And it's going to feature these business ones are going to feature the Intel Core Ultras. The problem is, this is again a Mac thing, right? Because it's like M3 is a higher number than M2.
Well,
so
done.
I know that M3 is better.
Yes.
I am a hero. I know.
Yeah.
I figured that out all by myself.
Ultra is the best, unless they have an Ultra Pro
Max. Is that what they're
Max.
Doing now? Just put Ultra on it. Okay. Well, okay. Do you know what? I'm kind of okay with that. If they want to go down that route, that would make sense. Because I think a lot of people do worry, or at least spend a lot of time wondering what these processor numbers actually mean. Like, what is i5 versus i7? And what the heck is i9? And, you know, you just see bigger numbers, you see
bigger
prices, so you just assume it's better, but it actually isn't always.
No, and I must admit, I've sort of come out, I used to follow this all the time, every new release, but
yeah, me too.
I've sort of lost interest in it now. It's Ultra, Core Ultra? Who cares? I don't know, I'm just assuming
it's
faster.
Is that because you just feel that it's powerful enough to do what you need it to do, whatever you buy, as long as it's not an i3, from Intel.
Well, that's right. You still do need to know, though. It's fine for me to say I don't follow it anymore, but then I still know i3 with a screen reader. I don't know about that. So you still need to follow it a little bit, but it just seems like the core range, the Intel core range, has gone on and on and on. And just sticking Ultra on the end, I'm still expecting it to be pretty much the same performance, just a little bit faster.
The bigger story, I think, with these processors is these neural engine processors, or whatever they call them, the NPUs, but I don't know what that stands for. Neural processing unit, I think it is. Is that it?
Yeah.
And basically, that's the brain of what makes the AI part do what we want it to do. It brings, or at least allows, the capability for the processing to be done on board the device, meaning you'll get faster response. So I think the best way to think about all of this is, remember when the Amazon Echo, they said that, you know, instead of when you ask a question, it goes off to the cloud and it takes a bit of time to get the response back. And that's why you have that delay.
Yes.
It's kind of like now they have the ability and the hardware inside it to be able to almost have its own brain. It doesn't have to go off and ask someone else. You know, its brain
commands,
is powerful enough to do it itself.
Time,
and you'll get a quicker response.
Up. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I don't know if how... Are you interested in a Surface or a Surface laptop?
I like to see what they do because I think they lead the industry to some degree. It's a little bit what Google do with Chromebooks or did. And they still do to some degree, although maybe not by themselves. They've tended to push that out to third parties, which I feel, and I wouldn't be surprised if Microsoft do the same eventually.
Well, that's what I thought. That's what it's sort of leading up to. You know, now they've sort of cleaved off the hardware, wearables, at least peripherals, I should say. Peripheral keyboards, mice, everything has now, they're not manufacturing that anymore. I just thought the Surface may be going the same way, but they seem to be leaning into it even more.
Yeah, funny that, isn't it? You would think that eventually, I mean, or maybe it's just an entire focus on Surface at the moment. Maybe that's where the focus is. That may change, though. I think that may change because ultimately Microsoft is a software company. And really what the Surface was, I think, intended to do way back when was to show you what the capability of a Microsoft device could be.
Yeah.
But, you know, ideally that would be something that would lead the industry, lead Dell, Lenovo, HP, whoever, to create new experiences.
And arguably
the great
has.
Thing, yeah, and this is the difference between, you know, Windows and Google with Android and all of that, is that you do get the option of different hardware. You know, with Apple, you get what you get. Now, you can either be happy with that or complain about it, but, you know, you get a bad iteration of a MacBook, and we've seen that with the bad keyboards and the touch bar and all this stuff,
yeah.
And you're kind of stuck with it for a long period of time, whereas at least you could change a PC to something else. But, no, I don't know if I'm overly excited about Surface hardware. I'm not as in love with it as a lot of people are. I know loads of people love it. I know lots of my blind friends who buy them, and I often think, why? It's got a touch screen. If you're using a screen reader, what on earth do you want a touch screen for?
It doesn't really matter.
But they love the style of it. They love the design
exactly.
of it. I just, that kickstand kind of bothers me a little bit.
You
I just
don't
have
shut
always
up
this
about
morbid
that.
Fear of breaking my machine by forgetting to pull out my kickstand and then my laptop is smashed to pieces.
Has it ever smashed to pieces because of that?
No, because I'm terrified to
there
use it.
There you go. Okay.
And also I use it in clamshell mode. So,
right. Okay. Fair enough.
Before we move on to the news with Grace, just to quickly say, if you have got a new MacBook Air M3, if you decided to go out and buy one, you remember they said that one of the benefits of it was you could use it with two displays. So you could plug in two displays, and you, as long as you kept the lid shut, you could use it with two displays in clamshell mode.
Yes.
Well, they've now announced that you shouldn't use it in clamshell mode because it stops it being able to heat up and therefore minimizes its performance. So, yeah, that's worked out well.
So we get, well, what if you just open it a little bit? Just a little bit of airflow in?
Now, then the screens will complain loudly.
What if you turn the screen off? Is there a screen curtain?
Hang on. Are you telling people who use screens to turn them off now? Is that where we're at?
Well, I'm saying if you're going to use
I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about other people. Other people!
If you're using two external displays, Stephen Scott, you don't need the third inbuilt laptop screen is what I'm saying. So you could turn it off, surely, and still leave it open to relieve thermal throttling.
I don't think that's possible.
Right, oh, fair enough. Okay, then. Just don't buy one.
Well, it doesn't seem to be, does it? Yeah, exactly. Although they are that some of the performance results on the M3 is kind of staggering.
No, of course, I'm sure they're beautiful. And who's using two displays? Surely you'd be using some sort of external hub to do that, and couldn't you?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a smarter way to do it, to be honest.
Mm.
Really
Thank
is.
You. Yes.
Okay, let's move on because big week, of course, for CSUN. Grace is here with all the news.
Thanks, guys, and welcome to another edition of the Double Tap News. This week, it was all about the CSUN Assistive Tech Conference. It's an annual event held by the California State University to promote accessibility in products and services. While many look forward to the speakers and talks on offer, the tech heads among us look forward to the innovations on display in the exhibit hall. Each year, CSUN is the place where new assistive tech is shown and launched, and 2024 was no different. Be My Eyes kicked off the week of announcements with a new service directory that will give blind and disabled people easier access to accessibility support helplines and company phone numbers. Mike Buckley, CEO of Be My Eyes, told Stephen and Sean why this matters.
Some companies have lines devoted to accessibility, but they're hard to find. They're not even known by some people in the company. This results in maddening Google searches, right? Or perplexity searches these days, I guess some people are doing. And you know, one of the very impediments to using these lines also is that by the very nature, the needs of some of our community are visual, right? You know, our vice chair, Brian Bastian, who couldn't be with me today, he's like, you know, a lot of blind folks really hate the chatbots, Mike.
The visual interpreter service Aira announced a new AI feature it's building into the Aira Explorer app. This will allow blind people to upload an image within the app and have a visual description created. Users can then ask questions of the image, and if they're still unsure, they can be connected directly with an Aira agent to get more information. Troy Otilio is the CEO of Aira and told Stephen how their new offering differs from what's already out there in other apps.
I'd say what's different about our AI is the integration with the visual interpreter. The AI is free, like a lot of AIs, but there's a point in time when you're working with the AI where it might not be able to provide an answer because the AI, the AI engine can't. For example, today I uploaded a picture of our session right here. We're on a video chat and I wanted to know the names of people and it refused. I was able to then for free ask the agent by tapping on the description and saying verify with agent. The agent came back and it told me the names, and I now know Sean is on the lower left. I know Stephen Scott is on the lower right, but it's that integration with the visual interpreter that is going to set the Aira image AI apart.
On the hardware front, there were some new Braille devices on show and being previewed. Orbit Research showed off their new Q40 and Q20 Braille displays, which feature a standard laptop QWERTY-style keyboard and 40 cells and 20 cells Braille displays, respectively. As well as connecting to up to 6 devices, 5 on Bluetooth and 1 via USB, it contains a standalone mode, where you can take notes and use the clock and calendar functions separate from your other devices. The displays are priced at $1,895 USD for the 40-cell version, and the 20-cell version costs $995 USD. They're both available to pre-order now, and will ship out in June. Another Braille display to be shown off at CSUN was from HIMSS International. The Braille eMotion is a 40-cell Braille display packed with innovative features, such as text-to-speech built in for natural voice reading, a note-taker, media player, and voice recorder app. Like other Braille devices, it can connect to multiple devices like smartphones, tablets, and computers via USB and Bluetooth. It's available now through HIMSS International sales channels. ARX also showed off new features of its wearable ARX Vision headset. ARX Vision is an AI-enabled talking camera designed for blind and low-vision people and can be used on Android smartphones as well as the BlindShell Classic 2 mobile phone. It translates visuals from newspaper articles and letters to bus timetables and house numbers into audio. However, at CSUN, the company announced a partnership with Microsoft, meaning the app works with the popular Seeing AI app, which is also now available on Android. The Royal National Institute of Blind People, RNIB, are selling the device in the UK and are part of the team showing off ARX Vision at CSUN. RNIB representative David talked to Double Tap's Michael Babcock on the show floor to explain more about how the hardware works.
It has an 8-megapixel camera which fits on the side, as bone conducting technology to allow you to hear the world around you. The main point of this product, I suppose, is to work with apps such as Microsoft Seeing AI and allow you to navigate places you haven't been before. So if you're a white cane user or a guide dog user, although Seeing AI is brilliant, it can be very difficult to use while moving. Certainly, you don't really want to be holding your mobile phone in your hand.
And there's lots more news to come from CSUN as we talk to Michael Babcock, who spent the week in Anaheim and brought back a lot of interesting conversations that he's keen to share here on Double Tap soon. Now to other news. And Google has opened a new hub in Ireland where engineers and researchers will work on technology to help people with disabilities. The Accessibility Discovery Center will facilitate tours that will allow members of the public to see examples of new technologies empowering people with disabilities via a series of interactive exhibits and gaming zones. This new center has been created at Google Ireland's Dublin base, following the success of the London ADC Center, which opened in December 2022. And finally, the popular website for blind Apple users, Apple Viz, is expanding its reach to allow users to discuss technology beyond its own borders. The website, which has been running since 2010, has always focused on the various Apple operating systems. However, those in charge suggest that it's now time to expand their horizons. They'll offer four new forum areas, including assistive technology hardware, Windows, Android, and smart home tech. You can listen to Double Tap next week for an interview with Thomas Domville, one of the leading moderators of the site. He'll join Stephen to discuss the changes and the challenges that it solves and potentially brings to the Apple-centric site. In the meantime, that's it for the Double Tap news this week. I'm Grace Schofield.
Thank you, Grace. Another busy week in the news headlines for accessibility. CSUN, of course, leading the charge, Sean. Mm-hmm. Some really interesting stuff. And there we're going to hear more from Troy Ottilio, as you heard in the headlines there. He's joining us in just a moment, along with Janine Stanley from Aira, to talk all about Aira AI. Or I keep calling it that, but it's Access AI.
Access AI, yes.
I think she called it Aira AI.
Well, yeah, you should definitely tell them that. Why not?
Yeah, I do. I think they should change the name immediately. The name immediately. On my say-so. But no, some really interesting stuff in there. And, you know, interesting, of course, to hear about Apple Viz. We're going to continue that conversation with Thomas next week.
But, yeah.
It feels to me like it's kind of answering that question. Where's the Windows version of Apple Viz? I ask that question a lot.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's taken this long to get there, because I think Apple Viz has got the most accessible, easy-to-use forum I've ever used. I think this is going to be very, very popular.
And it would do well, I think, to move on to talk about these kind of things. I mean, you know, the whole point, I guess, of doing this, based on the article I've read on the Apple Viz site, is to really just encourage more conversation in these areas, because people clearly want it. There are concerns, and they were raised about, you know, potential of the usual Android versus Apple war starting, which nobody wants, or, you know, the Windows versus PC thing. And they're trying to build the forums in such a way, I think, that avoid that. So not comparing, but, you know,
they're just banning
sure
Stephen
that...
Scott.
Yes.
No, you got separate...
That might be the... I was banned already, remember? I was banned from Apple Viz. Yes. Remember
you,
that?
You got. I do remember. It was great. You've got separate forums there specifically for, as it said, Android, Windows, smart tech. So there shouldn't be any problem like that anyway. And look, you're always going to get little battles in forums anyway. As long as the moderation has always been great in Apple Viz.
It's a great forum, very respectful from what I've seen as well. Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course, there's always someone who'll stir it up, but that's fine. That's okay. But people, right? People are involved.
Yeah,
what are you going to do? Have you seen social media?
No.
So, you know, I'm not worried about that. But I do think it'll be interesting. I will be talking to Thomas Domville. I will be also asking him why I was banned. Why was I banned?
Well, I think everyone knows
that's
the answer to that.
That's a bigger question.
It's fine.
I'd like to say it's because I haven't posted enough. That's what I'm going with. So we'll see what the actual answer was.
Yeah. Okay, we'll find out. Stay tuned.
Yeah, I'm more of a consumer of Apple Viz than a writer on it.
Yeah, that's because,
do you know what I mean?
That's because you got to register to sign.
Because I get banned. Right, look, stick around. We're going to talk Aira next. This is Double Tap.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap on Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Time now to talk about Aira and their new AI announcement this week from CSUN. With us now, Troy Ottilio, the CEO of Aira, and Janine Stanley, who is well known here on Double Tap. Good to have you both back. Troy, I want to start with you. We haven't heard much from Aira in a while. What's been going on?
Oh boy, you haven't heard from us because we have been busy. We've been busy hiring. We've been busy growing. We've added, I don't know, since we last talked, we probably added another 20 access partners, and we've beefed up our engineering team. I just got to meet for the first time in person on our first day on Tuesday, Jill Ratcliffe, who joins us in the sales and business development area. So outside of a bunch of announcements we're going to get into, we've been busy building the team.
Yeah, good. And it sounds like it's going well because, of course, that's what it's all about. I mean, from the customer point of view, it's all about connecting with those agents. So more agents, more people, more calls getting answered quickly. It all helps, right?
It just continues to build. And, you know, I'm here in at CSUN where we get to rub shoulders and talk to, I don't know, hundreds of our explorers and hearing all our feedback, which is generally positive. And we try and listen very carefully to what people want. And in that, we know that there's just a lot more we can deliver, but the core service is humming, and we're excited to provide visual interpreting to, you know, many, many, many thousands of people on a daily 24-hour basis.
Yeah. I mean, Janine, from your point of view, customer-facing role, as you've been in for a long time, you've talked to a lot of blind people like yourself and people like me and Sean who, you know, constantly send you emails saying, what about this? What about this? And you must get this all the time. And also, wow, we love Ira. Wow, Ira's great. And all of that wonderful stuff. But for you, Troy, actually getting a chance to speak to people on the ground, people who are using the service every day that you are working to make happen, what does that feel like for you?
You know, I was not in assistive tech prior to Ira. I've now been doing this for 10 years. And this is where I get the energy. It's great to hear from folks. I get the emails. I get the phone calls. We do the Zoom meetings. But when you're sitting across from someone and they're either telling you about their vision for what we could do more, or they're telling us, you know, a specific day or a use case where they worked with an agent and they were able to solve something and it really made a difference, it charges my batteries. I was telling my wife, I think last night, you might even hear my voice is a little hoarse this morning because I'm hitting that limit of, you know, talking around the clock. But you come to events like this, this is really reinforces, you know, why you get up every day, why you do the things you do. So for me, it's just very exciting, and it really charges me up.
That's very cool. Of course, hearing back from, you know, the end user there is what it's all about. And of course, I think we can all agree that the core of Ira is the agents, and that's working very well at the moment. I don't think I've heard any complaints at all. But what's new? As you mentioned, people still want more. We're never happy. So what are the new announcements?
Well, one of them is the introduction of AI, and we'll talk about that. I mean, we've all been reading the news. We know that many companies, so forget accessibility, AI is the new tool to be, you know, we all have to learn what is the best use for AI. I think in this field and specifically around visual information, AI is an incredible game changer. You know, it started, you know, with Ira, it started when we were founded. Let's take us back a little bit. Ira was a venture-backed company, so we raised money from venture capital with the premise of Ira. But the premise was built into the name. The premise was that AI would be part of the solution. Ira stands for Artificial Intelligence Remote Assistance. And up through 2020, a lot of the money that we raised went into the development of AI. Yet we could not figure out at that time how to make it effective enough, quality enough to make a difference. And so we didn't really deploy anything of significance, even though some of you may remember the agent called Chloe. And Chloe was able to do a few things. But enter 2023, when generative AI came out, we knew that we were going to be investing in it. It took us a little longer to get access to the public AI. I mean, credit to Be My AI for getting access to it first. I was talking to Mike Buckley just the other day about it, and credit to Scene AI for being kind of one of the first AI products to use computer vision. But at this point, whether it's Vispero, whether it's Ira, whether it's any vendor, we all now have access to the same underlying technology. The question is, you know, how to shape it, how to deploy it. And so with that, our announcement is really that you can provide images, you can take pictures, you can get descriptions, you can interact with it. You can do that with a lot of apps. But one of the main differences with Ira is that you can also interact with the agents. So we are stitching together the experience so that, you know, when there's a point in time when you're not confident about what the AI is providing back, that description, or you just want it to be verified, you can ask the agent, and I'm not talking about a call. You just simply mark the image or the description, and then you say you want some more information. You say that you want it verified, and free to you, the agent will respond in, you know, 20, 30 seconds with either everything looks great or, you know, here's what the AI didn't catch. You know, this was a hallucination or it was missing this information. So it's all to say that we now have what we call Access AI. It's an experience in the app that allows you to work with images, work with AI, and equally engage the agent, the visual interpreter, for that extra confidence, that extra trust.
Wow. Okay. Can I just clarify something? So when you say work with images, work with AI, is this a image description service like Be My AI, or is there something extra on top of that?
Very similar to Be My AI, very similar to Vispero, very similar to Scene AI. Yes. So Sean, in fact, maybe I should do this while we're on. I could actually, with using the Aira desktop right now, I could take a screenshot. I could provide that to Access AI, and I'll get back a description. I could ask a question like, what color is Sean's hair? Maybe it comes back red. Maybe it comes back brown. You know what the truth is. Green. It could say that.
I actually don't know anymore.
And but then, you know, again, you may want to be... You might want to be sure, because maybe you're going to call Sean out on social media that, you know, he needs to get a haircut, and so
his reach done. Yes,
that's where our integration with the visual interpreters comes in. So we're making it possible for free, and by the way, the AI is free too. So, you know, I'm often telling the larger population, Aira is free. We don't take a credit card to sign up. There's plenty of access offers in the core product, as you know, where you can use Aira for free. We sponsor 5 minutes every day, or even more frequently for people who don't have a subscription. But the AI just follows with that. AI is free and the validation is free.
Just to be very clear on this, because I know people might wonder, you're saying the service is free. Aira, as you say, is free. It has the free 5 minute call, and we've talked about that before. Is Access AI just part of that? Would you have to sign up at all to use Access AI?
Yeah, the answer is yes. Ultimately, the sign-up is pretty simple. If you put in your phone number or email into the app and you don't have an account, one is created for you. During that login process, you know, we send you a code to make sure it's secure. But that's the sign-up. It's install the app. Log in and the account is created for you. And with that, you get the access to the visual interpreters. With that, you get the access to the AI, and all of that is for free.
And any access partners you want to use, actually. And from within the AI, if you actually want a live interpreter, there's a button right in the upper right of the screen. You can deploy a live interpreter. And that's when we begin to look at, past the free 5 minute call, of course, that's when we begin to look at charging you for the use of our service, if you're not in using an access offer, that is.
But that's if you actually talk, if you initiate a call with the agent. Is it still the same if you talk via text message to the agent for more than 5 minutes, let's say?
Yeah, correct. Now, if you're using the AI, definitely not. However, if you are talking to an agent using the messaging feature from the home screen, then yeah, that's going to count as an Aira call that you would be charged for. But aside from that, there's a lot you can do with the AI and with verification of your image that you haven't been able to do before.
Guys, you know, there's often two schools of thought, I guess, on this kind of thing. One is, well, you know, we've got Be My AI doing this. There are other options, like through Copilot and other apps of providing similar functionality. But of course, the other school of thought here is that, you know, it's within an app, you know, and the integration is suitable, built for, thought about blind people, which matters, right? And, you know, a lot of people might want to access this and may never have used something like Be My AI at all for whatever reason, and actually have just been using Aira. So, you know, bringing these features in, I guess, does does help people access this kind of technology that perhaps they haven't used to date.
And if you attended our talk yesterday, I think I might segue into the fact that, you know, over the last year, we've been hiring a lot of awesome engineers, designers, developers, and one place we're really focusing hard is the usability, if you will, or the customer, the actual experience with the screen reader. So we have a team that is looking to go above and beyond and think about all the ways that you might interact and making it easy. For example, maybe Janine, you could walk us through a little bit on how that works.
Before I do that, Trey, I want to back that up with, we've got the engineering staff, which is fantastic, but we also have advisors. We have over 30 people who are acting as advisors from the blind and low vision community to back up the engineers to say, this is what we want in terms of tone of the responses. How many times have you interacted with an AI that said, well, you need to take another picture, or there isn't sufficient lighting. You need to get somewhere where there's lighting. And you roll your eyes and say, that would be nice. But what the advisors are doing is pointing out these things, telling us how we can reword them, what language feels more natural and appropriate. So that's huge. And then, of course, our beta testers that I happen to manage the beta testers now, so I'm very proud of my beta testing gang. They're able to bring this to you pretty quickly. But we do have 4 ways to get that image in. And one of the things that's a little different about Access AI is that with the detailed capture and with one of the ways that you can access a photo or an image from the share sheet, you can actually ask a question as you're submitting the video, which is something I haven't seen anywhere else. So you can say, tell me what lights are on in this photo. And you may have a picture of a modem or something like that. Tell me what lights are on and what color they are. And boom, you've got it. And so that's what's a little bit different. I encourage people, once you get your hands on the beta, to play with each of these input methods. We'll have some podcasts out about them, demoing them very soon. And so you can take a look at what each of them do and what's going to meet your needs.
You know, one of the things I've talked a lot about on our show is the fact that when it comes to Aira, one of the valuable features, I think one of the most valuable features of it, is the privacy aspect, the trust aspect as well, when it comes to being able to deal with sensitive documents. Let's take a bank statement, for example. You get your bank statement through, you want to query a transaction on there, or you get a letter through from the doctor and you want to know what time the appointment is. When you get that kind of information, it's advised by the good people over at Be My Eyes, you know, don't upload that image because, you know, you don't want to give that away. It's going to OpenAI. That could be, you know, used in some way for, you know, learning purposes for the OpenAI itself. So they're very strict on don't upload personal information. How does that work with Access AI? Because I'm guessing it's the same issue, isn't it?
No. So first off, thanks for asking that question. When you use Aira or any app, the guarantees about how your data is handled are in those sometimes long to read terms of service privacy policy. As an aside, we work with an attorney who focuses on making this simple as possible language, but ultimately we didn't have to change our terms of service. We didn't change our privacy policy to launch this. Why? Because you get the same guarantee about your data, as you just mentioned, with our Access AI. How do we do that? We are using the paid enterprise version of AI, and in a minute I'm going to tell you we also have access to Gemini, which is another model. So whether it's Be My AI, whether it's Gemini, or other models that we may include in the future, we are going to leverage the enterprise or secure version, and I'll describe a little bit on that, but ultimately we give you the same guarantee about your data. It is only, it's only stored with Aira. You know, these images that are going to AI are not, the OpenAI folks do not have access to them. The Gemini folks do not have access to them. Your data is handled in the same manner that it's handled with agents.
That's very interesting.
That's good to know.
Yeah, it is.
To be balanced, I think Be My Eyes also state that they don't use any images uploaded as in for part of the data set for teaching AI, but they may be stored just to make sure and just for training that it's been described correctly. But still, it's good to know that your privacy has been thought about from your point of view. So it's really reassuring.
Yeah, in fact, Janine hit on a point I should have talked about because we're very proud of it. Our AI journey started many, many months ago, and one of the first things we did is we asked 30 or more of the folks who probably would have the most and best input on AI. So, and it was across both, you know, legal, privacy, as Janine said, but that informed us on both, you know, how to do it and what statement to make. And ultimately it was, hey, we're going to make the same statement. We're going to have the same goal that anything you do with IRA adheres to the same standard of privacy and security.
I get my bank statement in. I can take an image of that and use Access AI in confidence.
Correct.
In confidence that
mm-hmm. information is going nowhere else that it should go.
Correct.
Except to the IRA agent, the person I want to see it. And at that point, is it discarded at that point?
The retention on data is in our privacy policy. We may retain data generically speaking, we can retain. We tell you that we will retain data for up to. I should get this right. I believe up to 18 months is our public retention period. How long is that image being stored today? I have to ask my engineers. I don't know, but it may be much shorter given the nature of AI.
But it's also encrypted, and we do regular security audits as well of the entire operation of IRIS. So, if God forbid there be any type of issues, we're right on them right away.
And just to be clear on this from the agent point of view as well, because I suppose there's always a balance to be struck here. How many times have you called a company and when you're on the line, it says calls may be recorded for training purposes? That happens all the time, right? I'm guessing you guys do similar at IRA. So this is not unique. It's not unique for data to be held.
No, it's when the service was started, we knew that not just training our agents, but monitoring them was going to be critical. And that's both from a, are they following the rules and the training, as well as gaining insights into how to build a better product. Whether it's your session with the agent, that's the purpose. Whether it's the session with the AI, that's the purpose. I'm looking at I did, by the way, take a picture of the screen today, and I asked some questions, and this interaction I just had with our image AI is available for the engineers to improve it. It's there for training and improvement purposes. So absolutely, that is the purpose of why we retain the data, and it says so in the privacy policy. It's to, for training and to improve the product in the future.
Perfect. Can I just ask, because you mentioned Gemini there, so is that you're not nailed down to one source? Everyone's talking about OpenAI, of course. So.
No, and we're gonna, just like anything we do, we know, especially when using technology, there are many vendors, and when possible, we're going to make use of the best one. And at this phase, with AI being so new, it's a good strategy to invoke multiple AIs. You at the moment do not have any control over which AI you use, but we are experimenting with the responses from both, and something we could talk about that our CTO talked about yesterday at our talk is more personalization. And that personalization may come in the form of either choosing your AI, choosing the, how verbose, how chatty you want your AI for an ongoing experience or a specific experience, choosing the tone. Do you want it to be, just the facts, professional, or do you want something more playful? So choice extends not just to the AI back end, but it's going to extend to other, features or capabilities of AI. And, here's something that I found interesting in this experience in developing AI. You might look at AI as just another virtual visual interpreter. And in this process, it's been great to talk to advisors, explorers, because some of the themes, some of the concepts apply to our agents. So some of that personalization that we will be rolling out in the future will be ways that you can more efficiently tell the agent what are your preferences. But back to your main point, yeah, we have Gemini under the hood, we have OpenAI under the hood, and we are looking at other models as well. And if something pops up that looks very promising, we will deploy it. If it meets the security and data privacy standards.
Janine, what's feedback been like so far? We're a couple of days into this announcement. What are people saying?
Well, it is a limited release, so we are releasing this very slowly because we want to see how people are using it. We also don't want to overload the model. And so people so far have been really positive about it. We're finding out use cases for it, and people have some really unique use cases, from being able to query things like the controls and lights on things like my coffee maker, which is just cantankerous, to people actually looking at things like scenery to find out if there are wildlife in their backyard, or just any number of things that normally they might have done with a visual interpreter, but now they can do it quickly with the AI. And being able to get more specific with the AI. So far, everything is great. We're hoping people enjoy it. We're hoping people use it and really push the boundaries of it. So I am curious to see what you and Sean have been able to do with it.
Mm. I want to say, though, you know, if there's any critique I see of Aira online, it is calls getting answered timely. Could Access AI help that in some way? Does it perhaps divide up a little bit some of the calls that perhaps someone might make to query something they can do with Access AI, and therefore make more agents available immediately?
That's certainly possible. Maybe just to address that, we know that we have been not staffing fast enough at Aira. We monitor that internally. It's something the team has been working on. It may allow me to point out that during last year, we started a process to convert our agents from being contractors to employees. We didn't make a big announcement about this, but I realized that it helps, you know, explain a little bit about what we've been doing to address wait times. We knew in 2023 that, you know, we have a service that is growing, and to make it even more attractive to be able to bring on more agents and also to do a better job scheduling, it was time to move to the next phase of Aira, where the visual interpreters, who are professionals, are employees of the company with benefits. And during that process, you know, we had to hire differently. And I think last year, at the end of the year, some of the call times, some of the wait times were well beyond what we expect, what you expect. And now, beginning this year and continuing on, we're at a much better staffing level. Is AI going to, you know, reduce call volume? Is it going to increase call volume? Because one might argue that with more functionality in the Aira app, more people will download it, which is our hope. More people will engage with it, and more people will make use of Access offers. So it is our hope that we actually get more calls. But for that reason, as Janine said, that's why our beta is not a public beta, but it's by, I'd say, invite, or within the app you sign up, and we'll be adding people, you know, daily, weekly, but we are not going to add everyone at once because we want to make sure that our staffing and the wait times are not affected by potential increased use of Aira visual interpreters.
Janine, an exciting time.
Definitely, definitely. And if you want to sign up for the beta out there, you can go to https://bit.ly, that's bit.ly/AccessAI beta sign up, all one word, Access AI beta sign up. And that will get your name on the list, and we will let you know when you are added, and you can then go and use Access AI.
Troy and Janine from IDA, thank you so much for coming on. And come back soon. Tell us how it's all going.
Absolutely.
Anytime.
So, Sean, wrapping up another big week of announcements, of course, with IDA there. Be My Eyes at the start of the week. Kind of nice that we've bookended it this way.
It is, yes. Almost like we planned it. We didn't.
But. We definitely did not. Yes. I promise, as if anybody would believe us if I said we did. But no, it's been really interesting. And we're going to continue the conversation around CSUN. I've got to say, there's one announcement which I'm so excited about.
Oh.
And when I told my wife about this particular announcement, she was beside herself.
Really?
So, and it may cost me about $3,000.
Oh, now I'm intrigued. What are we talking about?
I'm going to tell you about a robot dog that is
what
that is being sold.
What?
This is from Sony, of all people, of all companies.
Hang on,
right?
Sony have been doing a robot dog since 1990. They've always had a robot dog.
Well, this one, I didn't know about this one.
Yes.
It's called, I think you pronounce it Aibo, A-I-B-O, could be Aibo,
all right.
But Aibo, I think is how you pronounce
I-B-O.
It.
I-B-O.
And this is a $3,000 robot dog. By the way, not only is it a robot dog, it has robot dog accessories, which I'm like, it's got accessories. It's got a little dog bowl, it's got a little water bowl. You can even buy a bone for it.
Didn't you do a YouTube video saying enough of the robo dogs? What are you talking about?
Yeah, guide dogs. I want this dog.
Oh, right. This is just a family dog, not a guide dog, so it's okay.
Michael Babcock joins us next week. He's had hands-on and literally getting his fingers bitten by this robot dog. Details next week. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
The Walrus is Canada's conversation, and you're invited to take part. Download AMI's Voices of the Walrus, where professional narrators read selected articles from the magazine. Available wherever you download your AMI podcasts.